Good evening, everyone. Here we go. Welcome. Welcome to tonight's City Council meeting. It's a regular City Council meeting, Tuesday, May 27th, 2014, at the Veterans Memorial Hall. For the record, we do have a quorum. All members are present. And if you'd please join me in a moment of silence, please. Thank you. Thank you. Now, if you'd join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
That Thursday, June 5th, is the final day of school in San Luis Coastal Unified School District. So good news for some of you, bad news for others, but happy news for a lot of students. So please just keep an eye out for kids. There will be more of them released during the daylight hours now. Two Founders Day related announcements. Morro Bay's official birthday celebration is called Founders Day, as you know, and it is scheduled for Thursday afternoon, July 17. That is our city's official incorporation date. We have had a change in venue. The event will now happen at Morro Bay Park, which was formerly known as City Park, right where Morro Bay Boulevard meets Piney Way, across from the fire station. So stay up on the hill for Founders Day instead of going to Tidelands. And then I'm also calling all children who are interested, ages 7 to 17, if you would like to have a role in the Founders Day all-kid skit. There is a meeting this Sunday, June 1. It's at 3 o'clock to learn more about it. You don't have to be especially talented. You just have to be motivated to show up for practice, basically, between now and July 17. So the location for the meeting is St. Peter's by the Sea Church. It's in their community room. If you need more information about Founders Day, please call me at 305-3759. And I'd also like to just... Maybe other folks are going to talk about it, but I just wanted to let you all know that the 2014-15 proposed budget for the City of Morro Bay is on the website, and it's in advance of our June 5th budget hearing, which is the first day the council will be talking about the budget. So if you go on to our homepage, just look left, and you'll see the budget link right there, and it'll bring down the report. So thanks a lot to Susan Slayton for getting that up there for us. Well, perhaps... You didn't physically do it, but thank you for orchestrating that the budget be up there. So I encourage you all to take a look at it. And a final thank you to Bob Keller, who rode his bike tonight. He rode his bike last year at one of the council meetings, and I just wanted to say that we're wrapping up Bike Month and just wanted to give a shout-out to thank you for riding. Thanks.
All right, Christine, thanks. How about you, Nancy?
Just one quick additional announcement about our 50th anniversary. We have this beautiful fiberglass boat that's about yay big. Right now it's pure white, and we're looking for artists to paint it and decorate it like a Morro Bay fishing boat, since our theme is landmark and legacy. So it is currently on display at the Morro Bay Art Association. So stop in, take a look, pick up a little RFP folder. There's not a lot to it, your name and address, and then submit a design, and we have extended the date to May 31st, but I'm thinking we may extend it a little longer unless we get some really great ideas here, because it's a cute boat, and it'll be, you'll see it around town during the rest of the year's celebration. So, and the best part is, for artists, there's $1,000 little reimbursement or whatever for you to use for supplies or whatever. So please get by the Art Association, take a look at this little boat, and come up with a really fun design to paint it.
Thanks, Nancy. Noah?
Yeah, thank you. I just want to, well, recognize the Harbor Department for the boat christening that happened the other day for the new Harbor Patrol boat, and congratulate them on a nice turnout and a good ceremony. And Mayor Irons, for not getting your shoes too wet with the champagne or falling in as you smashed that champagne over the boat. And more specifically, to just announce to the community that the Friends of the Harbor has launched a nonprofit headed by Mr. Bill F.A. and a couple other Harbor Advisory Board members. And basically, it's modeled after what we have with the Friends of the Fire and Friends of the Police Department nonprofits, which are there to help those departments, and specifically the harbor, to address needs and to be another arm of support and community involvement for our harbor. So if you are interested, it's in the formative stages. They're really looking at different options of how they can construct this nonprofit and the focus. So it's an excellent time to get involved with that. And they've put out an invitation to anyone in the community who would like to be involved to give them a call and to reach out and get more information and jump in if you're interested. So Mr. LaFay would be a good person to call, and his cell phone is 550-9250. Or you can call the Harbor office and speak with Becca Kelly at 772-6254. And a couple of other quick announcements. We have followed up from our action at the last council meeting. The Citizens Advisory Committee for the wastewater or water reclamation facility, we have that announced now. We're accepting applications for people, citizens that would like to volunteer to be involved to help us look at the options going forward. And some of the qualifications that we've listed that would be helpful as you consider supplying your application would be in the lines of engineering, municipal finance, water quality, planning, and environmental design and process and permitting. So those are just some, but if you're just really have put together as a proposal to host an open house, visioning the future of the Atascadero Road, but also the power plant property. And correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Livick, but they are looking to host this open house to the community on the week of June 11th, 12th, sometime in that range. And it would be very much be a hands-on additional visioning and opportunity to revisit some of the previous work that has gone into the area, such as the New Futures, and then talk about going forward, looking at what they're thinking might be helpful for us as a community to consider. Can I turn it over to you, Mr. Livick, if there's anything you want to add to that?
Just want to add regarding the June 3rd meeting. That's the same as Election Day, so that the Vets Hall is occupied with elections that day. So we'll be having our Planning Commission meeting at the Morro Bay Community Center on Kennedy Way. We'll be back in the studio. We'll be where the Planning Commission and that pre-meeting will take place. And the student open house, we're still working with them on a location and the exact time. That's during their finals week. The professors are not so sympathetic about finals week, so it'll happen, but just trying to work out the best day for that to happen that doesn't conflict with a city council meeting also.
All right. Thanks, Mr. Livick, and thanks to you and the Planning Commission subcommittee and staff for working on this with the Cal Poly City and Regional Planning Department. That's it for me.
Okay. Thanks for those announcements. I'd like to just echo the same remarks about the open house and the boat christening. Very well organized event. Eric, thanks for your department and everybody for putting that together. It was well received and well attended. And then the bridge, I just wanted to put a shout out to Mr. Livick and your staff and RRM who worked so diligently on that project to get the approval of a waiver from the Coastal Commission. So I think it's worthy of well recognition through all that work. So thanks very much. Appreciate that. And with that, I think that concludes our announcements, and we'll move into public presentations. And tonight we have a Cal Poly architecture student presenting a slide presentation of a model concept of the aquarium in Morro Bay. And I think we have a couple folks that will come up. So, Robert, are you going to be coming up, or would it be Tara? Or yeah, okay. If you come up and do some introductions, and then maybe Remy can go ahead and go do the presentation as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor Irons. My name is Tara Malzone. I am the Executive Director of the Central Coast Aquarium. We are a nonprofit organization that offers marine science education programs for children K through 12. We have been offering these programs in Avila Beach for 20 years now, and our public aquarium serves as an educational tool for our students, and it provides an educational resource to residents of San Luis Obispo County and its visitors. First thing I'd like to mention is that when we are considering to respond to the city's RFP process, we knew that our goals would be to honor and build upon what the Tylers have accomplished over the past 46 years. Our plan would be to recognize that legacy. Our vision is we would vision the future Morbay Aquarium to serve as a hub for marine education, outreach, research, and conservation efforts. It will be a facility that will serve as both a public aquarium and a teaching research facility with classrooms, laboratories, and have a direct access to the Morobe Estuary and coastal ocean. This state-of-the-art facility will not only bring visitors to its doors to view and study marine life, but also exemplify the strong connection between the community of Morobe and the marine environment. The new Morobe Aquarium will provide multiple benefits and services under one roof. If we can build this aquarium and bring a lot of people to the community and benefit the local economy, our hope is to partner with other educational organizations that share the same mission with the Central Coast Aquarium. One of those organizations is Cal Poly. I'd like to bring up Dean Wendt. He is the director for the Center of Coastal Marine Sciences at Cal Poly.
Thanks, Tara. Good evening. Nice to be here. Thank you very much for hearing from us. I'm here just to, as a potential partner in this, represent Cal Poly's interests and also to introduce the student who's going to be speaking to you this afternoon on the vision that we have for the aquarium. For Cal Poly, it's a terrific opportunity. The Center for Coastal Marine Sciences currently has a relationship with the Central Coast Aquarium, a research and education memorandum of understanding in Avila, so we see extending that here to Morro Bay, potentially. And the center is developing a new degree in marine science right now, and that should be happening in the next couple of years. So that would be an excellent opportunity to have a new crop of undergraduates and a facility in a class by Professor Wiesenthal. And he took his students to the Monterey Bay Aquarium. He had his students talk with professional aquarists, and then he had them meet with people at the estuary program here in Morro Bay, with folks from the Center for Coastal Marine Sciences and also from the Central Coast Aquarium. And they took what we were envisioning and they built a whole series of models. And what you're going to see today from this tremendous student, Remy, is a representation of this vision. And so I want to introduce Mr. Canto Adams to you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Remy Canto Adams. I am a second-year architecture student, and we had the privilege of working with the Central Coast Aquarium and the National Estuary Foundation on coming up with what could become the future Morro Bay Aquarium. What I'll do this evening is take you guys on what would be the typical experience of any visitor visiting the aquarium. So we begin by having the public front, which is an aquarium facade that basically engages and creates a new building that isn't just a typical building on the Embarcadero, but a new building that stands out, claims identity among a whole slew of buildings that kind of falls short of just falling into the norm. And what it really does is create an abstraction of the local watershed and the marine life tidal patterns that become an educational paramount for the facility. And as that facade wraps around towards the bay, it dissipates and it becomes four fish that swim towards the bay, signifying the importance and the meaning of what the bay is to the aquarium and the community. Entering the aquarium, I put it on the side of the building just because when you see all the storefronts on Morro Bay and Barcodale, it's all basically on street front. I wanted to have this kind of circulation towards the bay be more important because it is about the bay. How the bay is important and why the aquarium is coming is because the bay. So I located it on the side of the building so people are naturally already drawn towards the bay and then can come into the aquarium afterwards. So on the first floor, it's basically dedicated solely to education via all the different series of tanks plus other factors. So for the aquarium experience, we have normal visitors would come in and they would basically take a journey through the local estuary from the watershed, up from the creeks, down through all the creeks, the mud flats, the woodlands, and everything, all the way to the bay and out to the ocean. So as they journey through the aquarium, they learn about the local ecology, the water cycle in the watershed, and how that water flowing from up in the mountains all the way to the bay has all this environmental impacts and all the different wildlife that is affected by this water, not only just the stuff in the bay. Also on the first floor, we have
AGP, can we get some help on the next step here, Dave? There we go. Beautiful. Got it.
There we go.
Got it.
Okay. Also on the first floor, we have service spaces and retail and observation. The service spaces are located behind the tanks, giving staff and anyone working at the facility ample room to service the facility and keep the tanks clean and informational and all the wonderful things behind the scenes where visitors don't have to see people carrying around buckets while they're looking in front of tanks. It's all behind the scenes, like Monterey Bay Aquarium. You don't see people traipsing buckets down the aisles in front of you. It's all behind the scenes, and it's given ample space where most aquariums tend to put cramped service spaces where people can't walk one by one by the side. This gives room enough for more than one person to walk by and have enough room and everything. We also have retail space to allow the ticket revenue from the aquarium to also supplement the retail revenue, so the ticket sales can be relatively low, so prices to the aquarium might not have to be so huge so that visitors won't be detracted by a high cost of visiting the aquarium. There's also an observation where people could take a break from the aquarium experience and look out and enjoy the view. On the second floor, it's mostly dedicated to education via classrooms. There's also a flexible use event space and staff offices. So the big paramount space on the second floor is the observation deck that stretches out over the Embarcadero edge out into the open bay. It gives visitors an unobstructed 180-degree view of the bay, which in most facilities that are currently located on bay doesn't exist because it's usually just windows or the actual boardwalk that exists. This places people above the boardwalk and not over the bay, giving them a new view that hasn't existed on the bay before. Also on the second floor, we have two classrooms, a lab setup and a traditional one. Each can accommodate over 25 students, allowing for local students to come to the facility and have an on-hand, in-depth, covering all the scientific needs of Cal Poly Sciences, the National Estuary Foundation, so they can bring their samples and everything straight from the boat dock right into the facility without having to traipse it through the visitors or anything. It all has its own access beneath the ground, undisturbed. It also has a direct access driveway that runs on the south side of the site that allows people to pull in their cars to the facility right underneath the aquarium so they can pull samples in without having to traipse them from a parking lot on the street, or they can pull their vehicles right to the boat dock, allowing them to service stuff and put Cal Poly's new marine science vessel right at the boat dock and have them have students and stuff offload samples or students onto the ship or to the facility with ease of access for everyone that is participating in the facility. And yeah, this could be what becomes of Morro Bay with the work of marine sciences at Cal Poly and the Central Coast Aquarium. Thank you.
Remy, thanks very much for your work on this. And Mr. Dean, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for bringing your student forward and Central Coast Aquarium for doing all this. There is a model in the back of the lobby area, and I think that'll be headed over towards the community center for about a week or so on display for people who might want to look at that as well for the viewing audience. So thanks very much. And any comments from council, or we can anything? Seeing none.
Just a quick question, maybe as far as the timeline. So it sounds like there will be a response to the request for proposals for the site. Do we know or anticipate a timeline for when that would be starting to work through the process?
You know, at this point, I think we're just looking at the presentation. But as far as timeline, I don't know if they'd be willing to respond to that. But I think they're moving forward on that, as I understand it.
Okay, I just bring that up because I'm sure members of the public are interested.
Sure.
So I would guess that we'd be doing a good job of getting the word out when this would be coming forward for more public involvement.
Yep. Thanks, Noah. And with that, we'll close public presentations. Thanks again for the presentation, and we'll move on to public comment. At this time, we'll open up for public comment. This is for items that are not on the agenda at this time. So please come forward, state your name. You have 3 minutes. Welcome.
Mayor Irons, may I speak to an item that is on the agenda?
Absolutely. Or something you don't want to stay for later. Yeah, thanks, Red.
Okay. My name's Robert Davis. I chair the Morro Bay Citizens Bike Committee, and I want to speak tonight to item D2, unmet bicycle and pedestrian needs. First, I want to say I appreciate very much the work that Mr. Leivick has done to present the unmet needs according to urgency and funding availability. There's one item, however, that I'm very passionate about and I think requires immediate attention. Can I have the overhead, please? That's the Class 1 multi-use trail that runs from Quintana to Cloisters Park. I believe that we are in danger of losing this major and popular multi-use path because of tree root encroachment. The pavement is buckling and cracking, and eventually it's going to become unsuitable and unsafe for travel. It's a major connector between North and South Morro Bay, and it is in constant daily use by walkers, bicyclists, skateboarders, people pushing baby strollers, commuters, students, and people just getting outdoors for exercise. It's a safe route to school for our high school students. I'm afraid that what's going to happen within a very short period of time is we're going to have major tripping hazards for walkers and obstacles for skateboarders. I see this as a risk management issue, and I think it's both a safety and a liability concern for our city. So I think it's important that we address this in the upcoming budget year. Thank you.
Thank you, Red. Public comment is open for those who'd like to address items not on the agenda, or if you can't stay for items later on the agenda, please come forward now.
Good evening, Mayor Irons and council members. My name is Bonnie Johnson, and I, too, am speaking about item D2, the unmet bike needs of the city. I do also appreciate Rob Leivick and everybody else's support for all the bike needs of the community. As you all know, I am working on a project of putting in a bike park in Morro Bay, so I am passionate about biking in Morro Bay. One of the items that is on the list for the unmet bike needs is the Radcliffe and Main intersection, which is adjacent to where the bike park is going to be located at. It has been an issue for decades. That intersection becomes a bigger issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Hello, Council. My name is Matt Makowetsky. I'm coming forward, resident of Morro Bay, but also chairperson of Public Works Board. One of the big items that's been on our agenda for the last number of years that's coming up, and I really appreciate what Bonnie's talking about with the bike park there, but it's a nice segue talking about what I'm going to talk about, and that is a safe route to schools situation on Greenwood. I know Rob Leivick, we talked about it a few years ago, but looking at the Tide Street from Yerba Buena to Island Street, that created this kind of conduit through North Morro Bay that's become very nice and conducive to bicycle travel. One thing that we really need to look at in maybe a more center part of North Morro Bay is the Greenwood from Avalon to Sequoia. It is really looking at improving Greenwood. It is a very dilapidated and very tired piece of asphalt in that part of town. But we have just a plethora of kids and families that use that, bicycles, strollers, and whatnot. It's very important to that part of town, and so I would like for us to create another bout of momentum to go after this safe route to schools if we can, Rob, or some other funding to improve that piece of pavement in Morro Bay. And I know when we talk about the pavement management index for Morro Bay, understanding money issues and whatnot, and Greenwood is going to be problematic because it's a long piece of road and it's going to be very expensive. But that's a big piece of real estate that's used by just a number of people in town from all ages, elder to people pushing children with strollers. So anyway, I'd like to put that in people's minds to think about for the future. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
Good evening. My name is Dave Albrecht. I'm the bicycle advocate for the San Luis Obispo Bicycle Club. I also consider myself a part-time resident of Morro Bay because I ride my bike from Los Osos through and to Morro Bay at least two or three times a week. And I would like to comment on item D2 and apologize for not being able to stay for the entire meeting. I'd like to add my compliment to the council, staff, and to the Citizens Bike Committee for the work that they have done already on improving the bicycle infrastructure in Morro Bay, and hope that that effort continues. As far as the list of unmet needs, I would second what Robert Davis said about the bike path. Again, my trip through Morro Bay is usually, the return trip from Cayucas is usually on that bike path, and it's somewhat of a landmine. I think it's a liability for the city. And so I would encourage you to seek the funds to repair that path and maintain it as a key aspect of your transportation, your bicycle transportation infrastructure. Secondly, I want to talk about bike parking, another item on your list of unmet needs. You're on the verge of completing this bridge over the creek, which will encourage residents and visitors alike to travel downtown and travel to the Embarcadero by foot and by bike. In order to support the use of the path, the increased use of bikes and pedestrians, I think you're going to need to increase or make available bike parking in these areas. I understand there's controversy in replacing a vehicle parking space with a bicycle corral, but I'd like you to consider a couple of points. Placing a bicycle corral or a large bike parking area in a vehicle parking space creates parking for 10 to 12 patrons, as opposed to 1 to 2 that may drive in a car. Cities large and small are putting bike corrals in downtown areas, in touristy cities such as Morro Bay, and this encourages people who are, say, within a 2-mile radius of downtown or of the Embarcadero to leave their cars at home, leave their cars in the campground, leave their cars at the motel, and come downtown or to the Embarcadero by bicycle. It reduces car trips, and it also reduces a lot of the congestion that you might see in busy areas. And then finally, placing bike parking on the street where it should be removes bikes from the sidewalk and leaves the sidewalks open for pedestrian access and makes business access a lot more appealing to your visitors. So again, thanks for all the work that you've done. I hope that as I continue my rides through Morro Bay, I'll keep seeing changes in your bike infrastructure. And thanks for your time.
Thanks, Dave.
Good evening. Jennifer Redmond, Edward Jones Investments, and president of the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce. Tonight, I'm just giving you a highlight on some things that the chamber has been up to. I first want to thank Bay News, our weekly newspaper. They have helped us to promote local businesses through doing a weekly. They're 1 week a month, they're doing a business of the month. 1 week of the month, they're doing a highlight of chamber events and things that are going on. Last but not least, we have promoted Lisa Nguyen to our acting director. She is a Cal Poly graduate and has experience working in nonprofits and helping local businesses advance their business. We're very excited about that. And we've also hired an office assistant, that has a degree in hospitality and tourism from the University of, but she has a degree in tourism and hospitality, and we're really excited that will be a good blend for us in different parts of Morro Bay. So we thank you for your support. We thank you for all you coming to our events. And last but not least, we also are starting our development on the citywide Morro Bay app. The mobile app is being developed, and that is going to list all businesses, organizations, and events in Morro Bay so that you can have an easy directory on your phone to find out what's going on and all the great things you can do in Morro Bay. So thank you for your support, and I see you.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Good
Good evening. My name is Lisa Nguyen, and I am the acting director of the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce. I did give you each a packet. I'm not sure if you got it or not, but this is the doing business in Morro Bay. So I just would like to hit a few of the highlights. In this packet, I have included the general information on the business license process. There is the business application, a zoning map for Morro Bay, and I put together a checklist of the different types of permits each business that wanted to do business in Morro Bay would need, and there's also phone numbers and addresses in there for those as well. I did fee schedules, and I also put in the sign permit application. And just a few extra items that I included was information on the Chamber of Commerce, as well as the history of Morro Bay. And the additional resources that I included was from the groups that we've been working with, the Economic Vitality Corporation, SCORE, and the Business and Entrepreneurship from Cuesta College. And I'd like to, as Jennifer mentioned, I'd like to make these available at the city office, or city planning office, as well as the chamber. And finally, I also want to develop another packet for the other two applications for businesses, the home base, as well as the out-of-town application. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Trina Doherty, resident of Morro Bay, here tonight representing Eco Rotary. I'd like to remind everyone that our second annual Greenlight Eco Fair is this Sunday, June 1st, from 12 to 5 at St. Timothy's here in Morro Bay. The Eco Fair is a free community event featuring eco-focused organizations, businesses, products, and services, as well as a fundraiser for Unite to Light solar reading lights. These incredible little lights are sent all over the world to impoverished areas where there's little or no electricity. This year, we hope to send 150 lights to Pace Universal, a girls' school in one of the poorest areas in India. We often take electricity for granted here and think nothing of turning on the lights after dark, but in many areas of the world, kerosene is still used as a fuel source to light people's homes. From homework to sewing, activities can be done using a simple rechargeable solar reading light instead. We will continue our support for Hands in Nepal, which takes these lights to extremely remote villages where they are building schools and libraries. For those much closer to home without access to light, we are planning to once again donate lights to the Maxine Lewis Homeless Shelter. Since education is critical to our Eco-Rotary mission, we have filled our fair with some really great participants that have a plethora of knowledge in many various green practices, products, and services. Both Cuesta and Cal Poly Sustainability Centers will be on hand. The Biodiesel Club and Estero-based Solar Solutions will have alternative energy information. We have an expert on GMOs from an environmental law perspective, delicious organic food by Good Tides and Vert Foods, beautiful handmade jewelry and locally made natural products, as well as the incredible lush Tower Garden, compost tea from Zero Waste Facility at Dairy Creek, and many local organizations dedicated to preserving our local natural resources. Given our very serious drought conditions here on the Central Coast, Slow Permaculture Guild will be conducting a free water conservation solutions workshop at 2 p.m. as part of their permaculture design series. New to the fair this year is the Eco Kids Corner, packed full of eco activities all day. Several local groups are creating this totally fun area for the whole family with some very cool entertainment scheduled throughout the afternoon. The fair will, of course, be a zero-waste event, courtesy of the Guerrilla Gardening Club. And as usual, our commitment to recycling and waste reduction is foremost in all of our projects. A shout-out goes out to New Times, this year's major sponsor. Additional donors include NEP, Carla's Kitchen, Coast Electronics, EcoSlow, Estero Bay Solar Solutions, Rabobank, Slow County Energy Swap, and Sunshine Health Foods. Got to get them all in there. We could not do this without everybody's help. And also, the supporters behind the scenes make this event happen. So please join us for the second annual Greenlight Eco Fair.
Within this presentation, our group has identified the following. The overall project goals and objectives. The 1,000-foot definition of economic development. And then the major pillars and roles that make up the four pillars of economic development for Morro Bay. These include Pillar 1, the overall philosophy, to build Morro Bay's economic foundation. Pillar 2, the role of the city to create a climate that supports, retains, and attracts and grows businesses. Pillar 3, the role of the chamber, to facilitate existing businesses and support new businesses and investments. Pillar 4, and last one, role of the Tourism Bureau to market and promote Morro Bay's lodging, retail, dining, and other hospitality businesses to visitors and groups. The purpose of these four pillars is to define roles and help reduce duplication of efforts and services. It is also designed to create synergy amongst all players to be focused on using existing resources and maximizing the strengths of each entity to reach the overall goals and objectives. We have also outlined in this presentation items to consider as we move forward as a group and created a tentative timeline to reach these goals and objectives. Our next step as a vision team is to sit down individually or in small groups with City Council as well as city staff to go over the full presentation, to have an open dialogue to gain support for this philosophy, define the steps to solidify this partnership, and how to move forward with an economic development plan for the City of Morro Bay. We ask you to support the vision team by allowing us to be a partner with you to help facilitate a dynamic economic development plan for Morro Bay, and hope each of you would be open to scheduling some time with the vision team to go over the full presentation for better understanding and dialogue. Thank you.
Thank you. Right on mark. Public comment is open. Please come forward. For those of you who'd like to speak, please come forward.
My name is Homer Alexander. I'm going to address the budget process. Last year, the majority of the budget discussion centered on $134,000 that you allocated to several organizations in town. The $134,000 represented 0.4% of the $30 million budget. In other words, you made decisions about 0.4%, and the city staff made decisions on how to spend the other 99.6%. Some suggestions. I would discuss with the city manager and Mrs. Slayton how they developed the projections for the major revenue categories. You may disagree with their assumptions. Since 80% of the general fund expenses are personnel cost, I wouldn't spend much time reviewing each department's expense structure unless you were willing to add or subtract an employee. You should understand the $800,000 cost allocation plan. How are the numbers developed? How often are they updated? Be sure you understand the city's financial exposure to liabilities that are not covered by insurance. I know you are basing your decisions to use excesses in the risk management fund to balance the budget because of a previous city council's policy that $500,000 is sufficient, but is it really enough? Be sure you understand every major Q request. Is the money being spent as promised? During your discussion last year, you did not mention the $5 million capital budget. You should spend time this year discussing it so the public knows how the money is being spent. I suspect the staff is going to recommend that you lower the reserve percentage. They tried this several years ago by presenting the council with percentages from other cities. Percentages mean nothing. You need to focus on the dollars the other cities have put aside. If it is necessary to hire contractors to clean up after disaster, the amount the contractors will charge will be identical to what they charge any other city for the same type of work. And finally, based on the numbers I took directly from this budget, the combined balances in the city's five major reserve funds, general, risk, harbor, water, and sewer, on June 30th, 2013, was over $13 million. If the figures in this budget are accurate, the estimated balances on June 30, 2015, for these same five funds is less than $4 million. Those numbers should scare you to death. Thank you.
Thank you, Homer. Anybody else for public comment?
Probably about 4 months ago, the State Parks came and made a presentation to the council and to the citizens about the 27-unit RV park that they're developing in Morro Strand State Park. And basically, I had heard nothing about it. However, there was a contractor's meeting last week, and the bids are due for this 27-unit RV park. The bids are due June 3rd. I looked at the plans. The plans that they've done are exactly as they presented them. There were no mitigation factors for surfers getting to the beach or any other thing. But the big impact that I see is like having a 27-unit RV park being plunked down right next to our city, where we have no impact fees for sewer plant, because they're going to have 27 hookups, 27 water spigots, 27 electrical spigots, and it's not the right word, but you understand. And the city appears to me that the state, I know it's an entrepreneurial fund, that the state says we have this money, we got to spend it. The good news is the construction work is not going to start till October. I think it's the 3rd of October. Their goal is to finish it by March 3rd. One of the big impacts the contractors were all worried about is the prediction of an El Nino. And of course, this construction work sits right at the toe of the slope. Everything that runs off of Highway 1 runs down right through the RV park, through the Crescent campground. So the citizens should be aware there's going to be a lot of mud moving this winter coming out of that and down the highways. But my point is there's no mitigation funds from the state. And when you have 27 hookups, that's their goal is to capture the additional snowbirds. And they say, well, we're not going to generate any more whatever, but I know there's going to be a lot more showers going on in the RVs. They are only 40-foot pads, so they'll be limited to 40 foot. That's a good thing. But at least it needs to be alerted and see it coming, because I think it's probably a benefit, but with it comes its problems, and there should be some mitigation from the state, I believe. Thank you.
Thank you, Perry. Anybody else for questions on public comment or public comment in general?
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. My name is John Heading, President-elect of the Chamber, but coming to you as a concerned citizen tonight. I'm not going to belabor you with a number of numbers. That would take a long time. The proposed budget, fortunately, I have received and digested significantly. I want to echo the concerns of Homer's presentation. There are unfunded mandates that are coming down that will impact the city in a number of years that will be extremely significant. Number two, there are a number of areas, from my understanding, where personnel have not received adequate raises over the last few years in order to be able to sustain what I would call a constant workforce dedicated to the city. Thirdly, I hear talk of the possibility of another rate hike and the possibility of a half-cent sales tax initiative. Now, that's just talk. That's not down in writing. I'm concerned about that. The bridge, Morro Bay Bridge, is, I think, an exciting and very important project. However, in the scheme of things, my concern is, what are the priorities for spending? Do you fully understand the nature of what I would consider to be the dire financial stress that is impacting our city? And I would appreciate it if you would give many of us the opportunity to speak in a longer period of time forum to be able to address the issues. My concern is documentable based upon the numbers that have been presented and my own personal evaluation looking out 5 years basically puts us into what I would call the category of being broke. And I'm extremely concerned about that and would hope that you would make that an extreme priority for this year. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, John. Anybody else for public comment? Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council.
And important point that was made a couple times regarding the bicycle bridge and the funding there, and I think it's important to let Mr. Livick respond to that. We all know that the focus and scope of the bridge project was expanded to be able to host emergency vehicle traffic at the request of our fire station and department, and that did add some cost, but I think there's some other exciting news that Mr. Livick might want to share.
Yes, the bridge project started out a few years ago as a fairly modest pathway and bridge project, and it made it through the public process, planning commission, city council. It did, and the designer's input did grow in scope and cost, of course, with that increase in scope. Don't want to get into too much into the budget issues because that's not on the agenda tonight. But we had proposed for additional supplemental funding through Measure Q. We've been working with our funding partner, SLOCOG, to come up with additional funding measures. And on our the next SLOCOG agenda will be a proposal that SLOCOG has is to increase the T funding, the Transportation Enhancement funding for the bridge project, to bring the bridge funding up to $980,000 and change. The city would still be responsible for the match requirements that we have on projects, but that basically drops that shortfall that we had and would be, if that were to come in, we would be reducing our Measure Q requests. This has to be acted on by the California Transportation Commission, and I will be making a visit to the Transportation Commission on June 25th to answer any questions they might have about the funding. Now, we've been told that while it is a big project in Morro Bay, in the grand scheme of the Transportation Commission's projects, it's kind of small. They're used to funding major freeway, interchange, multi-million dollar projects. So our SLOCOG funding partners don't believe this will even be an issue on their agenda. But I will be there just to answer any questions that they might have. So we're looking for SLOCOG staff is making a recommendation to fund that. And we'll be looking to meet with the Transportation Commission later on in June to receive that funding.
Thanks for that update, Mr. Levick, and for your work on that.
All right, thanks. And I think in response to some of the comments, as far as making a little bit more time, I think we can probably address that during our budget workshop as far as including more participation in that. So those are good comments taken. And I think all our comments tonight were well received. So thanks very much for that. And with that, we'll move on to our consent agenda. And at this time, we have seven items on our consent agenda, and we'll open up for public comment for items on our consent agenda. Anybody that would like to speak to items on the consent agenda may do so now. Seeing none, I'll close public comment for consent and bring it back to council. I'll give it just a few minutes for people to clear out. Okay. Thank you. Does anybody have any items they'd like to pull from the consent agenda? George? Christine? Nancy? Noah? Could I have a motion for consent?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion to approve the consent agenda by Nancy, a second by Christine. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. And at this time, I think we'll just take one short 5-minute recess just before we get started, and we'll come back in 7:05. Thank you. All right, folks, we're back. Thanks, Dave. AGP, appreciate your help. And, folks, we're back to our meeting. We're moving on to public hearings. At this time, we have item B1, which is resolution number 3314, continuing the program and levying the assessments for the 2014-15 fiscal year of the Morro Bay Tourism Business Improvement District. And that would be Ms. Slayton.
Thank you very much. Good evening, Mayor Irons and Council members. Tonight's public hearing on the Morro Bay T-Bid is the final step in the process. By adopting resolution number 3314, Council authorizes the continuation of the T-Bid activities as well as the 3% assessment. At the Mayor's request, some additional information was added to resolution number 3314.
Get a little bit of background for the public on what the amendments say. So if you wouldn't mind, Ms. Slayton, going over that for us so that everyone's aware. Because I think it's only us that can see.
Right. I was just, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's good. I was definitely going to get to that. That's fine.
Okay.
Beautiful.
All right.
Yeah.
There you are. Thank you.
Okay. Do you want me just to read the resolution?
I don't know if that's necessary. I think maybe highlighting
the points and the changes that memorializes it. I appreciate that.
Okay, what we actually added to the original resolution was discussion on the T-bid assessments, how they went from initially being 3% from June 1st, 2009 to May 31, 2010, and then going down to 2% from June 2010 and thereafter. Back in when June 1st, 2010 rolled around, no one did anything to change that, and so they did reset to 2%. In September, the City Council held a public hearing and first reading of Ordinance Number 562, which permanently changed the assessments to be 3%, and that ordinance was approved on September 27, 2010. The other issue that was brought forward was the number of years that the T-Bid has been in operation. And for the 2014-15 year, that will be the sixth year of their operation. And it will be the fifth time that the council has approved the renewal of the activities.
Thank you for that. Just to cover one of my requests, and thanks for doing that. It just added, as you put it in your words, the memorializing. It gave a little bit of history on the resolution, on the timelines. What if we started out with the original assessment, kind of going back down to a 2% and back to a 3. It's great to have that documented in the resolution. So thanks for that. Hopefully everybody else would agree with that, and we would move forward on this. But unless there are any other comments from my left or right, any discussions, Nancy? Seeing none? Seeing no more discussion on that, we can take a motion to approve resolution number 3314, continuing the program and levying the assessments for 2014-15 fiscal year for the Morro Bay Tourism Business Improvement District.
As amended?
As amended.
I would move that, or I would second it if you want to move it.
If you want to make that, if you want to make that affirm the motion.
Yeah, so I'll move the amended resolution 1314.
Great. And we have a second. George? Okay, great. So we have a motion by Christine, a second by George. And Mr. Pannone, so we didn't have to read this into the record as amended. Okay, great. So just so we're clear on that. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Great. Thank you for that. Now, moving on to unfinished business, and we have item C1. C1 is the adoption of ordinance number 586, amending section 2.08.120 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code relating to Mayor Pro Tem, and that would be Mr. Pannone.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a second reading of the ordinance that was introduced at your last meeting to modify the designation of changing vice mayor to mayor pro tem to be consistent with what the code said and what the government code says.
Great. With that, unless there's any other questions, I'd open it up for public comment for anybody who'd like to speak to this item. Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council and for discussion. Nancy, no, anything on discussion? Mm-hmm. I have a couple. I'll lead off with a couple discussion items. Well, first of all, I wanted to, you know, thank you for bringing this to our attention. I think that's one of the obligations we have is as ordinances become outdated or aren't working or aren't consistent, that's our, you know, responsibility of bringing these things forward and making them working. And so I appreciate you taking the effort, bringing it to our attention, and taking the effort to update this ordinance so we're not inconsistent and not creating any kind of difficulties. So anything else? Seeing none, I'll take a motion to approve the adoption of Ordinance Number 586, amending Section 2.08.120 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code relating to Mayor Pro Tem.
So moved.
We have a motion and a second. Do we have to read this by title? Okay. And the reading of the title would be adoption of the ordinance number.
An ordinance that was introduced the last meeting, and the title of this ordinance is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay, amending Section 3.12.030 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code relating to presenting and filing claims against the city.
Great. Thank you. If there's no questions from council, I'll open up for public comment. And since we have no public comment at this item, I'll close public item and bring it back to council for discussion. Any discussion? Then we'll take a motion for the an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay amending Section 3.12030 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code relating to presenting and filing claims against the city as read. Do you have a motion to approve?
So move.
And a second?
Second.
All right, we've got Christine and George going tonight. I'm looking at you guys. You're doing good. Motion by Christine, second by George. We're doing great, and we have read that into the record, Mr. Pannone, as stated. Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Okay.
You guys did the last.
Okay. Thing. All right. Thanks, you guys. We're moving on to item D1. D1 is the subject for tonight is our street summit, a review of the 2013-14 activities and recommendations for future work. Mr. Livick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Our capital projects, Rick Sauermine, has joined me at the table for this presentation. One thing we did notice was the first table in there, the completed schedules, completed streets, there was a column that was inadvertently left off the current year's project. So we've created a new spreadsheet. The spreadsheet always had those columns, but somehow they just didn't get printed. As the mayor said, this is a review of this last year's most recent work, and if we want to look at previous years and recommendations for future work. We have a couple of things that we would like to highlight in what we're doing currently with additional sources of funding. For example, the recent sidewalk work that you see going on all over the downtown as a result of our community development block grant funding. So we have about $175,000 built up in that fund. And unfortunately or unfortunately, it took us about a year and a half to get through the federal process on the NEPA documentation in order to spend that money. But we had a bigger contract to let, so I think we got better prices by lumping that work together. Additional highlight is what I brought up earlier is the opportunity that SLOCOG is recommending some additional T funding for the bridge. That was due to the Bob Jones Trail coming in under budget, and there's some leftover T funds that SLOCOG would like to remain in the county, so and for a non-motorized project. So based on all indications, we'll be receiving that for our bridge project. Additionally, $275,000 in Regional Surface Transportation Act, RSTP funding was made available for South Bay Boulevard. I think that's a great effort of ours in getting that regional money. SLOCOG normally would see that as a local street, the city's responsibility alone to work on. But we do get a lot of commuters from Los Osos. SLOCOG recognize that and provide some regional funding to help do some repairs. And lastly, I'd like to highlight the new active transportation program, which rolls up kind of all those non-motorized programs that we used to have, safe routes to school, some of the other planning efforts into one program called Active Transportation. And we have just recently applied for the Greenwood segment for that grant. And with the help of a former SLOCOG employee who we have temporarily employed with us, Ms. Gaiska Velasquez, I'd like to thank her for her great work efforts on that grant application. She kind of knows the secret handshake, so we're hoping to be successful with that grant. And I'm going to turn it over to Rick now to highlight our past work effort on this.
In a well-run pavement management program, what you'll see is you'll try to target streets that have reached 75% of their life, and that typically happens about 15 years after they're constructed. If you can target that maintenance rejuvenation of that roadway at that point, you can usually do it for about a dollar square foot. If you let it deteriorate beyond that point, it's going to cost somewhere between $6 and $15 a square foot to do it. So you can see it's very important for us to catch those roads before they start to deteriorate. And unfortunately, we have a high percentage of roadways that have gone beyond that point. That's what makes it so difficult for us to catch up. And so we're trying to blend our program. Last year, as we went through this street summit, we established several potential improvements. First, we established geographic project areas to help us spread the funding more equitably across the city. We talked about establishing a bond issue to raise capital. We were able to implement new rehabilitation techniques. We're doing something called a triple layer, which combines several very common repair techniques, but it gets a whole lot more life for much less investment. And we hope to continue applying that technique more broadly across the city as this year we work to do a complete reassessment of where we are with the streets. We're 5 years now into our pavement management program. It's a good time to make some adjustment. We're transitioning from an old micropaver software system that's very difficult to use and requires a license for every user So that's a very expensive software. We're going to transition to something called Street Saver that has a single license for everybody at the city that wants to use it. We believe that that's going to be a big help as well. The program this year that we've proposed has got several elements to it. Well, first, before we do that, let's just kind of review the bidding from last year. We spent about $700,000 on our street maintenance program last year, and that included $100,000 for maintenance. We awarded two contracts to improve our roads. One were to dig out really badly deteriorated sections of road and rebuild them, and the other was to resurface through either what we call a microsurfacing or that triple layer that I talked about. By combining these different techniques, we were able to cover 33 of our street segments, and that's about 14% of our roads, or 7.4 miles. This year, we've proposed a program that, in its basic form, would allocate $262,000 to take care of 16 street segments. If we're able to find more resources available in the budget for an additional $600,000, we could get another 21 segments, and we could rebuild parts of Panorama, which is probably in the worst condition of any road in the city. We're also proposing to repair six hillside streets with a trench repair. There's an old water line that we did some repairs on a number of years ago, and that trench is starting to fail. The road is separated. There's a very large crack that's allowing runoff to infiltrate. And if we don't spend funds to repair that, we stand not only to lose the roadway but also the water line. And so that's a real high priority. We're also moving forward, as Rob mentioned, on the South Bay Boulevard reconstruction. Very heavily used segment of road here in the city that's deteriorating rapidly, and fortunately we've got some outside help from SLOCOG to fund that. It's also very important for you to know that the rules are changing in street maintenance, and it seems that they never get any easier. In this particular case, there's been a lot of attention to the Americans with Disabilities Act and the fact that there have been over 20 years of efforts that have not really ever had any dedicated funding. But that doesn't solve our problems, whether there's funding there or there's not.
Rick talked about street segments, and as you notice on the list of streets, you might see like a Blanca 1 or a Beachcomber 2. Those numbers really probably don't mean anything to anybody but the programmer on the model. They're just street segment numbers assigned by the model. I think when we do this report again, we're going to give you cross streets. So that we know that that Blanca is from what street to next street, so that we understand where exactly these streets are. Also want to point out that the work on the waterline trench repairs is really not due to the anything that was done with the paving of the street. It's due to the fact that when they replaced that waterline, they used beach sand as backfill in the trench, and that beach sand is migrating, thus leaving a void and opening up that trench. It's really the construction of the water line that caused the street to fail, so we are proposing to use water funds to make those trench repairs, because as we saw on the intersection of Coa and in that neighborhood, when one of those water lines lets loose, it makes a real large mess to people's property, and we lose a lot of water due to that. So we need to catch those migrating water lines before they completely migrate apart. That kind of concludes my clarification of the a couple of things.
Great, thanks for that. George, Christine, any questions? Christine, any?
So, yeah, it's kind of an overwhelming question for me to even ask it. I apologize for asking it. So we're in the streets that we have been rehabbing or repairing. The truth is that at some point they're going to have to be completely dug out and replaced. What would you say the percentage of that would be?
Well, we did a complete reconstruct on King's, so that's one I know that won't have to be done. Now, let's see. Okay. So that leaves the rest of them.
Right, exactly.
Well, I think you've heard my story before.
The streets
were never built as streets. They were county dirt roads that were slurry sealed on top of the red rock. And then we became a city. We did an overlay on top of that. We need to really build these streets like they're supposed to be built as streets with base, compaction, asphalt paving, or go back to dirt roads.
Okay. Okay, well, we're getting there on the dirt road portion, I think, on Panorama nearly. Okay, so actually my question then is about pavement management plan. So right near we're at the midpoint now with the plan. So when will we start developing the new plan? And have you even thought about that? Are there some things you might do differently for the new plan? Or are there some things we should think about doing now that would impact? Because I know it's kind of a 5 years isn't really that long in government planning. So do you have any other?
I wouldn't say that we're halfway done with the plan. We would be halfway done if we would have spent several million dollars.
You know what? Let me clarify. We're midway through the 10-year plan.
Okay.
That's what I was clarifying.
I got you.
Is that correct? It's a 10-year plan originally, right?
It was to rehabilitate all the streets.
Well, our pavement management plan was a 10-year plan.
10-year plan.
Yeah.
So we constantly reevaluate the programming. We're switching to a new program that would be much easier to use. The Micropaver is an Army Corps of Engineers program that was developed for runway maintenance. Great program for runway maintenance. Not so intuitive for street maintenance. The Street Saver was developed by some Bay Area cities and their MPO up there specifically for street maintenance. So that's one thing we'll be doing. We'll be doing a complete reassessment of pavement conditions so that we can input that into the model. I guess when it comes down to it, the main issue with Morro Bay streets is how much money do we have each year to spend on them? And I think you've probably heard this from me a bunch of times. You know, it's several million dollars to do our streets, 10, 14, 50, depends what PCI and what we're going for. Either bring everything up to good or maintain that average of 70, that kind of C-minus grade point average. But statewide, that's what the state's shooting for, is to have all the streets on average a 70. We're not there yet. Statewide, we're billions of dollars short.
It's a small celebration, but at least it didn't get worse. So thank you for keeping the PCI at 63. Okay, that's all. Thanks.
Nancy?
I have just a couple of what I think are probably really short questions here. On attachment 2, we have kind of a pinky color that's high priority and then a golden color that's medium priority. What's the decision-making process for what's high priority and what's medium?
We take a look at the PCI as one element of it, but we also look at which roads are about to hit that inflection point, the point where rehabilitation now will save us a lot of money if we don't put it off. And so that's how we've identified that. Some of them are really bad roads. Others are pretty good roads that are going to get real bad real fast if we don't do something this year.
So that's the decision that you make here between goldenrod and pink or whatever they are.
Yeah.
Okay, the other question I have, since you gave us the last part of this other page, the completed ones in 2013-14, were about 6 months short of finishing 2014, and I'm wondering how many of these on this list have actually been completed, or are there still those left?
They've all been completed.
These have all been completed.
Yes, ma'am.
With 6 months to go.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Noah? I have a few questions. Forgive me. It might have been the Monday holiday. Usually I get an opportunity to go through some of my questions ahead of time, so they're not so much of a surprise, but I'll go through them. I'm sure we can get through it. The grant opportunity, Rob, you spoke of with the Active Transportation Plan grant with Caltrans. Is that the grant that usually comes up January, February of every year? Is that the same grant opportunity that comes up? Or
well, the ATP is all brand new. This is the first year, right? Yeah. This is the first year of the Active Transportation Grant.
Okay.
It used to be several grant programs. There was Safety Lou, Safe Routes to School, planning grants were included in there, and they've lumped all those together in the Active Transportation Program grants, and this is their first call for projects for that Active Transportation Grant Program.
And so when is that, is the application period open? What's the window, and when is it, or is it just kind of an introduction?
It closed on the 21st.
And we have a grant application in for that project.
Right. Now, there will be another opportunity in November, so we'll look to that one as well. A lot will depend on how these two grant submissions fare and in the process.
Okay. And I think there's another one that comes up, since I've been on council anyway, we get them every year from Caltrans. I think it's at the beginning of the year. There's an open grant period, fairly consistent. Maybe that's the one.
That's the planning grant, dedicated planning grant. This year, there were no grant opportunities for cities. It was all MPO-based or municipal planning organization-based. I think SLOCOG applied for a planning grant. Mm-hmm. We're hoping next year they'll open it back up to cities for transportation planning projects. And we're hoping to push forward our circulation element as one of the projects that we would move forward with that planning grant opportunity.
Okay. Great. Thanks. And then... The $250,000 or the $262,000 proposal versus the $589,000. So if we're looking at in the budget, we've got $250,000 dedicated from Measure Q to the bridge, yet there's perhaps some T funds from the Bob Jones Fund that might come from that. Not that we've approved that budget, so we're still kind of open on how much funding is going towards the bridge from Measure Q that could be going to the street. So the proposal that we're looking at tonight, the 262, can you talk about how we came to that number versus the full 589?
We looked at past council practice on how much Measure Q funds have been allocated, and it has been in the $250,000-ish. We received other monies that councils allocated, excess reserves, moved money from other projects around.
Maybe spreading it out a little bit, and primarily in North Borough Bay. So I think there was kind of a decision there on how we balance that. We might not have hit that index number exactly by number, but we just kind of looked, we revisited from a geographical standpoint, and I think that, I just wanted to speak to that a little bit, how we address that with this street summit and public input, I think is going to come from when we reassess that five-year plan.
Yeah, so last year's street summit, the year before, we spent almost everything in South Morro Bay. Basically, those were the best streets. It was the best bang for our buck to preserve those streets. We could do more paving miles, just addressing the south end of town. We heard about that at our Public Works Advisory Board Street Summit from what was known as the red zone. We picked the colors. We didn't intend it to be the red zone, but it was so red because there was so much red, all the streets kind of bled together up at the north end of town. So we added the geographic component into the streets assessment and, you know, looking at dividing those monies north and south, but still not trying to vary much from the pavement preservation strategy. You know, nobody really liked my plan of we'll let North Moore Bay go until they're dirt, and then we'll go up there and rebuild everything. That wasn't a very successful plan of mine. So we've added that geographic component. We'll continue adding that geographic component. I would like to see, as we become a more mature pavement management plan, to look at zones. So to divide the city up into regions, and we would rotate around the city on a regular basis. Other cities do this so that, you know, maybe once every 7 years, you know your street is going to be touched. We have a lot of work to get to that point, but ultimately that would be the goal, is to basically develop these zones so you have certainty that we haven't forgotten about you, and we'll be around to see you in 7 years.
Is there kind of a cost savings and mobilization when you're doing zones like that over?
Of course, sir. If you're doing all the work in, you know, one area, you're not having the contractor go all over town. It's not probably quite as big here in Morro Bay because we're not that large of community, but there is some cost savings by not having the contractor have to jump from one spot to the other and do small work all over town.
Okay. Before I overlook public comment, we haven't opened up for public comment yet, so I'll do that now. For those of you who'd like to speak to this item, may do so now. We'll open up public comment for this item. Please come forward and state your name. You have 3 minutes.
Yes, Barry Brandon, Morro Bay. This is on page 150 of your agenda tonight. It's that color chart that Nancy Johnson was speaking about. And it is kind of mysterious. You alluded to it a little bit. And I guess the question I have is, how do you tell Pacific 1 and 2 from Sandalwood 1 and 2? And I guess the question would be obvious, since we have a wonderful computer, he's got a website, and you could download this, is there any way we can have a map, or a map that we could come and, as a citizen, say, okay, how do I find out where Sandalwood 1 is, or San Jacinto 1? It would really be helpful, because it will solve an awful lot of questions. And then the next question is, what is the 911 number we need to call for huge potholes? Is that notify me, or is that call Bob Livick, or is that call Mr. Irons? Because I think there are some, we were lucky we didn't have a wet winter, and so our streets are not as bad as they could have been. But we have some potential that are pretty staggering, and I would like to see some way to find out. I don't know how you do it, put it in your water bill, but we'd like to have a number or a way to find out how to best notify. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brandon. Anybody else for public comment at this time? Seeing none, I'll close public comment and give Mr. Livick an opportunity to respond.
The best way to get your favorite pothole on the work list is the Let Us Know module on our website. So left-hand link from the main page, second or third one down, click on Let Us Know. There'll be a bunch of categories there, traffic, police, and one of them is streets. So click on there. You fill out the work order. That goes automatically to the street supervisor and to the maintenance superintendent, gets on their to-do list to do that pothole patching. That's really the best way. The second best way is probably calling me, and I'll do the same thing. You can call
here, or is it just looking at this? I'm just looking at paving streets.
That's separate from our whole maintenance operations. So they will continue to do that pothole patching, pothole repair, that's excuse me. The work order list is how they develop those, along with self-generated activities So if they see a pothole, they're not going to ignore it until the work order comes along, but they will add those to the list also. So that's a separate component from kind of the major street work in the pavement management plan.
Okay.
I would also point out that last year we worked really closely with Parks and Rec, and as they developed a large backlog of work, and in particularly areas where there were very large patches that needed to be done, we did roll that into our contract, and I'm sure that we'll do the same thing
okay.
this year
as we do
that development.
Perfect. Thank you. And so, as far as I've received some comments and from residents and whatnot about repair and the kind of the tooling we use, compactors and stuff like that, as far as putting asphalt cold patch down, the difference between cold patch and a contractor that's doing the same thing, any difference in materials?
So we do cold patch is a temporary patch. It's an asphaltic product that we have a pile of it in our yard. We can go immediately out with cold patch and fill up a pothole. Generally, you wheel roll it, compact it into place, tamp it down with a shovel, get in your truck, wheel roll it so it doesn't move around. That's only a temporary repair. Quick, really suitable for when it's raining and you can't get out there with hot mix asphalt to do those repairs. So that's one of our techniques in our toolbox. Hot mix asphalt's another tool that we have. We have to go either to Paso, Santa Margarita, to get from the batch plants over there, get about anywhere from 2 to 5 tons of asphalt in our truck at a time. 5 tons is kind of the maximum with the dump truck that we have. We'll take that out. We'll either do a dig out, so we'll square up the hole, pothole, dig out the old material, put in base, compact that down, and then lay hot mix asphalt on top of that. We have a roller, compactor roller, roll that into place. It's good to go. The other technique that we use is called the skin patch. So it's the surface isn't probably quite as bad as it hasn't potholed out. There may be some alligator in there. So you clean up the loose stuff, you put a patch over the top of that, and you feather that into the edges, skin patch. And then you have complete dig-out reconstruct. We've done some small areas in the city with our own crews. We don't have a paving machine, so we use a skip-and-drag tractor with a Leighton box on the back of it to drag asphalt across the hole. It's not the most efficient way to do it, but for the size work that we do, it's adequate. We're not paving streets. We don't have enough manpower to really pave streets with. That's why, as Rick said, on some of those bigger dig-outs, we combine those with our contract for the street reconstruction work and had a contractor do that work.
Okay. Great, thank you. I'll reserve any more questions and comments I have. Are there any more discussion for the rest of the council to my right? Nancy?
I came up with a question while you were talking here. Talk about using the Notify Me on the computer. Is there a way to let you know how big or bad that pothole is, or do you just write in and say, I have a pothole?
There's a description, free form description that you can add descriptions to it. I think there's even a Facebook page if you want to join Facebook. Save Morro Bay Streets, I think it's called. I'm a member, so I look at that every once in a while, where people have posted pictures of their favorite potholes around town. I can't remember if Let Us Know allows you to attach a document to it. I think it does, and you could email a. Attach a picture to it. You can also email it directly to any of the maintenance superintendent, Mike Wilcox, or myself, Rob Leivick. Our emails are always first initial, last name, morro-bay.ca.ux. So take a picture of your favorite pothole, email it to me. I enjoy pothole pictures. hope to see those coming in.
Careful
so it's, if your German Shepherd falls in this pothole and you can't get him out, you can take a picture.
You can take work by you and the other departments, because as I've been involved, I'm definitely noticing improved communication with you, the engineering department, and the maintenance department. And I think that's translating into a better efficiency and savings, and then ultimately higher quality, more improved work with the streets. And that's really important because, like you said, our resources are limited. So thank you very much for that and for keeping the Public Works Advisory Board involved with the Street Summit and getting the public involvement there. Overall, I think updating this, the timing's great, and that you guys are really being proactive on stepping up and identifying ways to improve this. So it's just great to see this happening without us as the council really having to push too hard on this, besides identifying it as one of our top priority goals like we did last year. And we'll be discussing that again this year. So just good work. And with the Let Us Know modular, another really nice feature of that is that there's some tracking for the people that do submit a request, whether it's potholes or something else. You get a chance to be able to follow how that's being addressed, and there's some two-way communication potential. And so definitely encourage people to use that. And I want to just bring up the discussion. We had, you know, in your report you discussed the need to identify additional revenue sources if we really want to get ahead of this. We did have a discussion, I want to say about a year ago, about that came out of the Street Summit, where some citizens and then the Public Works Advisory Board recommended that we discuss the potential of a sales tax increase or some other avenue to try to get ahead of this. And at that time, we had appointed a subcommittee to begin the exploration of it, and it was myself and Councilmember Nancy Johnson. And so I can see within this report you're strongly suggesting that we start that process to bring up whether that's something that we want to pursue or not. So I think it might be worth us talking about it tonight, just to see if we want to go ahead as the subcommittee, Nancy and I, and go ahead and have a meeting with staff and have that discussion and come back with a report. It seems like something that is still obviously on the radar and we haven't adequately addressed, so I just wanted to bring that up for a discussion.
Good points, Noah. Any other discussion to my left? Pardon me, we're all good over here. You know, as far as at this point, if you want to include something like that in a motion, but we are at a point where we have a recommendation and alternative and what kind of direction we want to go for funding this year. And we've had a lot of different discussion other than pointing to that result. So unless anybody has, I'm getting a nod over here. So, Christine, you have some comments?
Well, thanks for bringing us back to the agenda and what we're tasked to do with tonight. I would agree that we need to put at least $262,000 into the streets for, I agree with the recommendation that your staff have laid out for the next 5 years. And I think that, I don't know if we want to put in, I don't think there's any reason really to put into a motion, but through discussion, it is interesting. I think, Mayor, you asked the question about why the $250,000 a year for Measure Q. And I appreciate having the responses. Well, that's just kind of been the deciding amount for the last several years, so we're definitely going to have to take a look at the Measure Q money going into the budget.
Yep.
I think we want to really focus on what has been proposed thus far for Measure Q and see if there is an ability to, if we want to change the amount or if we don't. But I think we should think about that in advance. And then I would support starting the conversation about some other kind of revenue activity to increase the amount that we have dedicated for streets, because I guess I would just ask one final question. If you got $14 million, which is what you're saying it takes for our streets to become rehabilitated, could you come up with a program to spend the money?
Certainly we could.
All right. Well, then there you have it.
It would be difficult to spend in 1 year. We would probably look at spending it over several years. I don't think there's enough contractors in the area that we could probably They would be in each other's way, so okay. It would be a multi-year program. But, yes, we could spend $14 million pretty quickly on streets.
Okay.
And we could do it much more cost-effectively.
Okay, moving to the next 15 years or so of streets. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Noah, did you have comments?
Yeah, my comment would be, as I understand and recall our action about the subcommittee, I think we have taken all the action from the council side to establish that committee and ask for that that information to be returned after we meet. So I don't expect that we need to take any further action or bring that back.
Accept the priority in as attached in the report, but not probably pick a funding level tonight and to do that through the budget process.
Perfect.
If
so
that
moved. No, I like the way you put that.
I can make a motion then.
Yeah, I was just writing that down as well.
I'll move that we receive the report and we adopt the priorities of the streets via the budgeting process.
As proposed?
As proposed.
Second.
So now we've got this side going. So we have a motion by Noah and a second by Nancy. Good job. All right. Was that motion pretty clear then?
Yeah.
Okay. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Great. Pardon me. Thanks for that. Now we're moving on to item D2. Item D2 is the review of the list from Morro Bay Citizens Bike Committee list of the unmet bike needs, and we did have public comment on this earlier for those folks that couldn't stay, and this would be Mr. Livick or Mr. Sauerwein, which I'm sure which.
I'll take this one.
Okay.
This is an item that is kind of new for council. We've never brought the unmet bike needs to city council before. Typically, they go, staff looks at them, provides SLOCOG with what is reasonable to meet. They go into some SLOCOG report, I won't say never to be seen again, but
no.
Anyway. So typically, the Morro Bay Citizen Bike Club and other citizens provide a list to San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. I won't say SLOCOG without saying their real name again. San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, which is our metropolitan transportation planning organization that doles out funding for projects. This unmet both bike and transit needs are reviewed by the SLOCOG board every year for reasonableness to meet. This year, we are bringing this item to City Council to also review, and we have gone to our Public Works Advisory Board, and you'll see a table attached in the staff report, which is staff's ranking of the projects. They're both by priority and ease of implementation is how we rank those projects. And I do have a couple of comments to make regarding some public comment that was earlier that I thought of. Mr. Albrecht's comment about bike parking needed in the downtown. One of the issues was that is, you know, we have no bike parking funding. After reviewing our parking in lieu fund, it would be appropriate. That would be a source of funding to fund a bike corral or to in that parking management area. So it could be used in the downtown or Embarcadero. Looking at the Cloisters to High School bike path with the route intrusions and speaking with our maintenance staff, they think it's going to be a fairly simple repair to catch up with that. They have they can grind that asphalt out, do a thin overlay over the top of it to smooth that out. We can do that in the short term. You know, that was one of our issues with that project is to rebuild the entire bike path. It's a major funding issue, but I think we can do some stopgap measures that improve the surface quality and kind of slow down that deterioration of the path. Those cracks are not only a problem from the roots growing up, but it lets water in underneath the pavement and deteriorates that pavement quality. As I stated in our Public Works Advisory Board, things like painting striping on the streets is kind of a no-brainer. That we have to do, and that we would fund with our 2% set aside from our local transportation funds, or if they happen to be on streets that were doing ceiling work or pavement management work on, it would be done as a matter of course. The Safe Routes to School, the Greenwood Project is one of the projects that we applied for a grant for. Some of the other projects may be more long-term, such as or outside of our purview, widening the bridge over Toro Creek, Caltrans. The Cayucas Connector Project will take care of that. It would show some issues there at the intersection of Radcliffe and Main. We have trimmed the vegetation back, removed a 35-mile-an-hour speed limit sign right at the intersection, because once people see that sign, even if they're not to that zone, they tend to start speeding up. We'll be placing radar signs in that stretch to give people a visual indication. And then we've hired a traffic engineering firm to look at some other improvements that we suggested making, like changing the signal timing at Main and Quintana. Although I do have a key to that signal cabinet, I don't want to play with the timing until I get some input from a traffic engineer that's looked at that. That concludes my overview of these unmet bike needs, and I would recommend that the council forward this list, although it's probably a little late to get in the slow cog package for the technical advisory committee to look at, to forward this on to slow cog for their consideration. Thank you.
Great. So questions from council to staff? To my right, Noah.
Yes, thank you. Just a quick question. You mentioned the bike parking and the potential for something to be worked in through the parking in lieu in the areas that's appropriate. And are you feeling that's something that you could implement on your own, or would you need some council direction or support for that?
I mean, I think it's a pretty modest activity. I don't know that it would meet the threshold that we would be required to go to council for that. I mean, it's from what I've seen, where it's been implemented in San Luis Obispo, it's a couple of bike racks and some paint on the pavement there. So it's a pretty modest parking improvements, probably in the $1,000 range. I think probably the bigger issue is going to be the public education, because some people will view it as loss of street parking, that you're taking away a spot for one car. Although Mr. Albrecht pointed out, you did just create 10 bicycle parking spaces by doing that.
Okay, so most likely it would start as a pilot type of approach?
Yes.
Okay, and when we had talked earlier about this, you had suggested there may even be room to fit these in without losing a parking space or taking up valuable sidewalk space.
Yes,
so I'm sure
we could look at that. And then, of course, we would want to work with the business owner adjacent to that space and make sure that they are especially viewing as a pilot project, and make sure that, you know, because we want to make sure this gets used and that we're not spending, even though it is a modest amount, for not a gain in parking.
Yeah, and I think Mr. Albrecht at one point did offer to help with that business outreach.
Yes,
he did. Okay, great. Those are my questions.
Nancy?
I have just one. I was a suggestion, though, you could start in front of the bike shop. That's a good place for bike parking. I've noticed in several cities, I think Paso Robles and San Luis, especially along with some other places out of town, that they are painting their bike lanes. Do you have any research or any idea about how effective that is, especially, you know, for our class twos, like on Main Street, places like that?
It does make the lane more visible and gives a visual narrowing of the roadway. So it looks like you have less road to drive on. That creates friction for the drivers. They feel like they have a narrower space, so it slows traffic down. I think it's been very effective, especially on California Boulevard in San Luis Obispo. They have a much brighter green. It's not your typical standard traffic green that you would see maybe curb painting with. It's a, I don't know what color green that is. It's a bright,
right.
It's a very bright green. And I want to contact them to find out what that paint color they use there, because if we're going to, for example, Councilperson Christine Johnson mentioned, you know, the painting of Sharrows, and I think Sharrows would be a good thing to paint on the pavement in that green color, because I think it would stand out much more along with the bike lanes.
I think they call that Mustang green.
It looked like LED green to me. George, anything? Christine?
I do, thank you. And, you know, perhaps you didn't see it yet, but we did, in some of the public comment tonight, I appreciate folks coming out and talking. We also got about four or five emails, including one from the executive director of the SLO County Bike Coalition. He specifically talks about the green paint, so I'm sure he would know exactly what they used. But he also talks about that when they do surveys about folks, what are barriers for people bicycling more, they come up with three things. Actually, speeding vehicles. So we're not going to be able to change the fact that, you know, certain bicyclists feel that certain cars go too quickly. Original idea, but it would just be a really simple way to remind folks that you could share the road with a bicyclist, and then it would just take some paint if we're bringing that kind of work here anyway, and then a few signs. I know, Mr. Levick, you reminded me about the signage. So something like that's a simple way that doesn't take away anything from a driver, because I know that the bicycle community is always very aware of, you don't want to give something to a pedestrian or a bicyclist and then take something away from, you know, someone in a vehicle. So I think a Sharrow, where it's just a flat paint, doesn't really affect too many people. So something like that on the Embarcadero, I would just add on perhaps even into the block somewhere, or somehow make a recommendation of that, and just suggest that we could take a look at that. And then two other things. We are right now redeveloping several lease sites on the Embarcadero, and we've seen some of those pre-plans come forward to council when we've received them here. And I know that there were several that had kind of mentioned taking out some of the parking maybe on the side. They were going to remove parking and put something else there. You might want to talk to, just a suggestion, to talk to Mr. Endersby. Maybe there's some space for one or two of those projects to incorporate more bicycle parking. I know we've almost mentioned it almost every time if they could incorporate it, but it might be a great way to do a bike corral there if they were already thinking of taking out a space. But I don't know what – that's just something to suggest, discussion about. I also agree with the comments about reaching out to our merchants. I found something online, and I'm almost – scared to tell you what city I found it in, because that's where everyone's going to roll their eyes. But I did a little bit of research about bike corrals. There was a really nice one I saw recently, and I sent a photo of it in, I think, from Ventura. And it looked to me like they didn't take any parking wasn't removed. It was not a parking zone anyhow. It was a red zone from the beginning, I think. So it didn't impede the parking. So it was very, very close to the corner. So maybe just reviewing that, because, again, it's best not to take something away to add something. So also from Portland, Oregon, which even if you roll your eyes, they've made incredible infrastructure investment in biking. So I think that we can look at them as having tried a lot of things, and either they've worked or they haven't. So two things I found from this city is definitely the idea, and you've heard Nancy Johnson and Noah Smuckler talk about it, and I know George is going to talk about it too, probably, encouraging business support for any kind of a bike corral. And two of the business owners mentioned in a PowerPoint is he said that new customers expect a corral, and maybe they pick us because they can park their bike nearby. Another business owner, and these are restaurateurs and cafe owners, they say biking to a location seems to make an event or an afternoon out to do something simple, like to bike and meet someone for coffee or a drink. And then the last one, which I think really would speak to people in our either downtown or the Embarcadero, this business owner who has a little pub said the corral has created more foot traffic, benefiting the neighborhood and bringing more customers into our door. So that's kind of something that if you work with a business owner can propose to them, maybe it's something that they would find advantageous for them without removing something. I mean, not everyone will want to do it, but certainly we have some development going on now. We have a new place in the corner of Morro Bay and Main, and those folks are really looking to make a community out of that corner, and then I guess just take a look at the Embarcadero. So with that, last question is timeline for repairs. I know you thank you for reaching out and talking to Mr. Wilcox, but what do you think timeline would be for some of those repairs on that path from Coral to the high school?
Well, I guess fortunately it's not in an emergency situation. We're not in a situation where the pavement has, you know, buckled. We have vertical gaps. But if we don't do something in a few years, we will. So I would expect to probably work with Mike probably after school gets out. Might be more appropriate to work on that section because we do see a lot of, you know, high school traffic on that bike path. I think if they even picked one day or half a day or a couple hours every week, it's kind of like our general plan, you know. You just have to eat that elephant one bite at a time and just start working on it. We could get this work done in a matter of weeks. I don't have Mike here to nudge and say, is that possible? So I would continue to work with our maintenance staff to get that work done.
Okay, great. Thanks. Because you know what will happen is they brought in tonight photos, and next thing they'll do is they'll bring in a video with the, you know, webcam on their helmet, and then you'll see them riding. It is, I mean, I think it will get worse, and I think it's wise, especially with the connections going in, the improvements with the bridge over Moore Creek. I think we'll see more people using that path, visitors as well. So thanks. Thanks for bringing it to us. I think it's been a great, obviously, we had a lot of public comment about it, so thank you.
Okay, thanks. I just have a couple questions. We do still have to get to a public comment, even though we did get some earlier. I did want to speak to, you know, I agree with the list that we have here and that recommendation. I just wanted to speak to a couple other things. And once again, kind of a last-minute request from a Citizens Today and met them at the Del Mar Park. And there is a pathway from Ironwood parking lot to the other side. What is that? Is that
Island? Is it Island
Oahu
Street
or something like that?
Island
Street.
Think.
Yeah,
Panorama.
Thank you. And it was pointed out that a resident had tripped and took a fall on that one section, and that's coming out of the parking lot. And I can send you a picture of it. It was kind of last minute, but I do have to speak to it because when we're talking about bike paths and the bike path that is so popular that we're talking about with the routes. That one there, as it was explained to me, I guess it was the reason it got so bad is because we were using vehicles on that section while the tennis courts were being constructed, and very, very degraded and in disrepair there. So if there's something that if we're going out with our crew to look at doing some repair on the uprooted part, we should be definitely looking at that. I can do the let us know module as well, but I just wanted to speak to that because really it was it's pretty bad. The other part on the Ratliff and Main part, just wanted to kind of the gently reminder of the Caltrans, you know, if there's something for a planning grant, if that is an opportunity for us to continue on, that might be something that we might want to consider. And then I did mention to you earlier today the striping. I think it was, you know, and I sent you that link, but there is a striping technique that is being used for not just stripes, but it's kind of a paint and rumble strip combined. So it's a unique way of applying a stripe, but you know, reminding traffic that they're drifting into the lane without creating the actual bots, dots, or rumble strips, and that's something for us to consider as well. And those are the only questions, comments, but I do officially need to open up for a public comment at this time, and I'll do that first, and then Mr. Leivick, maybe you can respond if there's anybody in the audience. I know we have two that might want to speak to the unmet bike needs report at this time. May do so. And seeing none, I'll bring it back. I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. And Rob, if you want to respond.
I'll work with our maintenance staff on that pathway.
Yeah.
And that's from the
the parking lot off of
going,
Ironwood.
Going to the tennis courts.
Going towards the tennis courts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before the tennis courts project, that wasn't in that great a shape, so I'm sure that that project didn't help it along. I know that Parks has some parking lot improvements, a project plan there, and they're hoping to work with our neighbor, Chevron, to, because they access their property through that parking lot, so work with them on a project along there. The reflective dots was in, thermoplastic striping was an interesting process.
I looked
at it. I'd like to probably talk to somebody that has done it and see if there's any issues. And then they need to remind folks that it looks like Radcliffe in Maine is a city street, but it's really not. It's within Caltrans's right-of-way. And whatever gets done there has to be done with their approval. So I think I brought this up before that, you know, they would need to approve any structural improvements. And they have a project there. I know that they're have on the books for installing handicap ramps on both corners there. So we'll work with them on that project to see if there's any other improvements that we can do along with it, such as striping and signage and that type of work.
Okay, great. Any other comments at this point for staff? I'm looking to my right. It looks like Nancy.
I just have one. I know we're going to pass this whole list on, which I think is important, but I remember the years and the time and the effort that went into getting that Class 1 bike lane, and I would hate to see it deteriorate any further. The other one that I notice a lot that I think is a serious problem is the corner of Quintana in Maine. I know we changed the striping several years ago so that people pull over to the right and then the bike lane is on the left. Yet there's still a lot of people who are going down and then just zipping across the traffic to get to the Class 1. So that whole, it's kind of a combination of Quintana and Maine and Class 1 together that needs some help. And I think that just in terms of...
We're still looking at that, trying to come up with a good way. We have some... physical constraints, topography, a big retaining wall. Like if we wanted to just move the Class 1 further up the road.
Around the corner.
Yeah, we have to move a big retaining wall to do that and probably gain some right-of-way to do that. So it's not the easiest spot in the world to work. So, you know, I would follow the suggestion of the professional bicyclists that have talked to us before is, you know, drive defensively. If you feel comfortable, get out into the lane, take that left-hand turn when you get the green arrow. If you don't feel comfortable, become a pedestrian. Get off your bike at the corner, press the ped head to signal cross there, remount your bicycle, continue on the Class 1 path. Those would be the two legal ways to use that intersection.
And much safer, I do believe.
Yes.
I just wanted to add that I think the restriping there on Main Street, bringing the broken line further up the hill, has really helped a lot with, I've watched cars then, you know that they need to pull over to the right to make a right turn onto Quintana, and that the bikes have the access further out.
I think it's helped also with just the drivers there,
yeah,
knowing where you need to be in relationship to making either going straight or making a right turn.
Exactly.
There. Because you're hitting that crest of that hill and you really can't see the striping until you're there.
Of course, that's also striping that probably needs to be repainted a little bit.
Probably.
Thank you.
Any more comments?
Yes, I do. A couple of them, and most of it comes from our conversation. I just have some suggestions, and one would be that I think from the conversation tonight and from the knowledge that we can do the work on the Cloisters bike path, item number 3, in-house in a much more efficient, cost-efficient manner. I'm going to suggest that we raise the priority of that from a current medium up to high. And so I'll go through these couple of adjustments and then see what comments we have. The other was, I think that we should add the Del Mar pathway improvements and maintenance component. And I guess I'd be open to a suggestion about to what level we should add that, but whether it's low or medium, depending on maybe staff input on that. And then my other thought was to increase the bike parking priority from low to medium. So those were just three adjustments that I wanted to throw out there. And the last was the suggested by, I believe, Christine about general safety improvements to the Embarcadero, just to keep things tracked and noted so we can follow them. So maybe I'll
agree.
Oh, great, thank you. Maybe I'll ask Mr. Livick. The two new suggestions would be Del Mar and then safety improvements to the Embarcadero. Not sure if Mr. Livick wanted to suggest a priority rank on those.
Safety sharrows on the Embarcadero probably should be done with any paving work that we and that's anticipated not that distant future. I don't believe we're planning on doing some work on there with perhaps a sewer project. We have a sewer line that will need to be have some major work done on it in the near future. Just trying to schedule that so logistically it worked for avoiding the rainy season and the busy season. We're not left with much time to do a fairly major sewer rehab project down there. But when we need to resurface after those repairs would be the perfect time to do the restriping down there. So I would put it as kind of a medium priority. The Del Mar bike or Del Mar pathways is more of just a general maintenance issue. I mean, I'd put it in the same, it's not a bike path per se. It's not one of our designated bike paths. It's just general park maintenance, I think. I mean, I think it would be whatever the priority council wants to designate for that Cloisters path, it would be in the same as that.
I just suggested that we move that to high. Is that a little too aggressive?
Well, it's kind of the same type of work that we would do there. So,
okay.
Again, I'm speaking for another department without knowing what their schedule is.
Okay, so just to review then with Mr. Livick's input, that we add
your comments. I would agree with the suggestions as
same. Yeah. Same. Yep. Thank you. It's good. It's good.
George, okay. We get consensus on that.
Should I make a motion?
I'm thinking about buying a bike.
All right.
Oh, wow. Progress. Economic development.
You know,
the bike shop.
Downtown.
Yeah.
Get into this.
Get in there and see Dave. Would you like a motion, Ben?
That would be great.
Okay. I will move that we receive the unmet bike needs list and we add Del Mar parking and trail improvements with as a high priority.
Can you just clarify pathway instead of trail? I mean, this is it is a designated pathway.
So yeah. It would be the Del Mar pathway in conjunction with the parking improvements. It's a high priority. We also add safety improvements / sharrows on the Embarcadero in conjunction with sewer work, collection system work, as a high priority, and that we upgrade the Cloisters item number 3 from medium to high, and that we upgrade the item 8 bike parking from low to medium. And with those changes, we forward the list to SLOCOG as soon as possible.
Second.
We have a motion by Noah and a second by Nancy.
It's tiny. I just noticed a tiny little edit.
And discussion, tiny edit.
Yes. They only have 2 8s and no 7 on the list.
Right. And the 8, so it would be, it's under the bike parking facility.
Yeah, it's just probably before it goes to SLOCOG might want to be reformatted.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
You're welcome.
So with that, the motion still stands as corrected. And no further discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Great, you guys. Good discussion. Thanks, you guys. Moving on to declaration of future agenda items. Anybody like to speak to future agenda items? Noah?
I just have one. It's kind of a bit of a housekeeping, but it would be a review of the performance and recognition of the new solar energy system at the Teen Center.
Just kind of a receive report. Mr. Livick's all good on that.
I believe that'll be Mr. Woods.
Mr. Woods, okay. Anybody else? We get consensus on that?
Yeah, I support that.
Any other comments or agenda items? Seeing none. Thanks for the meeting, and we'll call the meeting adjourned. Thank you.